Adam, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us on the show this morning. Just as a first point, can you explain to us why the dingo fence was originally built?
Yeah, sure. So the dingo fence came about because early pastoralists or sheep grazers tried to run sheep in Australia, like they people have successfully in Europe and England and stuff before them. And they quickly found out that they were losing lots of sheep, particularly lambs, to dingoes, the native dog of Australia. So the fence was built, and it was kind of an interstate effort to try and contain them. So I guess it's important to know that the fence alone doesn't do that. There's actually a control act in each state that means that dingoes are essentially exterminated south of the fence on the southern part of the country.
And so, well, 120 years is a substantial amount of time for an ecosystem to adapt to human intervention. What are some of the long-term effects that the fence has had on the local ecosystem?
Sure. I guess when you say adapt, it isn't. It isn't a long time period. A lot of the things we see happening in Australia, for most ecologists, we consider that a relatively short time. But moving on from that point, yeah, so I guess there's probably two or three main issues, keeping it very broad. The first one is you remove the top water predator from an ecosystem. That's what we're doing here. And their prey items tend to increase in number. And one of the main prey items in Australia for the dingo and for proper dingo packs that hunt together is the kangaroo, or, you know, kangaroo euro macropod species. So south of the fence, we see much higher numbers, generally speaking, in just about all areas than what would naturally be present. That goes hand in hand with the pastoralism that came and introduced water points and more permanent water supply from, you know, sinking bores, making dams, that kind of thing. So kangaroo numbers also increase from that as well.
Yeah.
The other main effect of removing the topwater predator is one called the myth of predator release hypothesis. And it's not so much a hypothesis anymore because it's actually been well proven in a number of places around the world. So the hypothesis started in the US a couple of decades ago, where they realised that for example, in Yosemite, wolves had been removed and lower order, sort of middle order predators, for example, the coyote and stuff, were actually originally controlled by the wolf. And the wolf is very akin to the dingo. And so they were actually boosted in numbers. But then what happens then is that predator causes increased pressure on their prey items, which are usually smaller animals. And so those smaller animals start to, you know, decline greatly. In Australia, we don't have natural... We have some, for example, quolls, but we don't have... we have some introduced mesopredators, which is the cat and the fox. And, of course, most people are aware now that, you know, cats and foxes cause lots of damage to native species. That's exacerbated when we don't have dingoes. So I've done an experiment in the past, and several other ecologists around the country have as well, different experiments, and we're seeing that if we have dingoes present, we generally have lower cat and fox numbers, or at least their behaviour is curtailed or controlled in some way, which may allow animals in the critical weight range of the first, like, 0 to up to 4 or 5 kilograms to do better.
If you've just tuned into The Daily, we're speaking with Adam Kirkpatrick from the University of Adelaide about the 3,500-mile dingo fence, which runs through central Australia. Now, Adam, is the fence still necessary for farmers to protect their livestock all these years later?
That's a very good question. There has been a little bit of work, and people have started to look into alternatives to fencing. Certainly, what we're seeing in the last couple of decades, and I mean, this is a recurring problem, is wild dog numbers increasing south of the fence. And this happens for various reasons, you know, seasonal conditions, holes in the fence dogs get through. Maybe there's been a reduction in baiting and trapping for a while and allowing populations to increase. What happens then is generally you know, obviously there's a reaction by farmers and pastoralists and the government to try and control the numbers through increased baiting and programs and shooting and trapping. And often farmers south of the fence, like in South Australia, for example, in those first station or two south of the fence now, what we're seeing is they're doing less sheep grazing and more cattle grazing. The cattle, if you are careful with your calving, generally they do quite all right with dingoes present, which is why we have cattle north of the fence in Australia. So you can do alternatives to sheep grazing is probably the first thing. There's also other potential ideas and things people have tried. For example, corralling the sheep at night, which is difficult and, you know, adds cost, of course. There's also things like having companion animals, different breeds of dogs and stuff that potentially protect the sheep and keep dingoes away. How effective that is, I'm not sure.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Adam, for joining us on the program this morning to have a bit of a chat about this. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. No worries.